Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media webcast, Power the Next Phase of the Industrial Internet of Things, Workload Consolidation. I'm your moderator, Brandon Lewis, here with today's speakers, Pavan Singh and Tony Krupe of Wind River. I'd like to start by more formally introducing our speakers, beginning with Pavan Singh, who is Senior Director of Business and Market Development at Wind River, where he leads the global business and market development function for core products of the company. In this role, Pavan works with customer executives globally on leveraging the latest technologies to drive their innovation and digital transformation initiatives. He has 17-plus years of experience building technology solutions and has spent the last few years building industrial IoT solutions for a wide range of markets, spanning manufacturing, medical, energy, and transportation. Tony Krupe, Director of Field Engineering at Wind River, will be joining Pavan Singh today during the Q&A session. Tony and his team are responsible for enabling workload consolidation solutions for leading industrial and medical companies in North America. He has a strong technical and business background built upon 10-plus years of experience in real-time and open-source software for devices and cloud computing solutions. He has a master's degree in electrical engineering from NYU and brings 30 years of experience in the device, hardware, and software space. Now, time to address a few housekeeping items before we begin. Today's event consists of roughly 50 minutes of presentation followed by 10 minutes of audience Q&A at the end. Directing your attention to the features of your audience viewing console, the Enlarge Slides button will maximize the presentation slides to fill your entire screen. The Download Slides button allows you to download and print the slides if you prefer to follow along with a hard copy. The Forward to a Friend button enables you to send an email that includes a registration link to this event so that your friends and colleagues can also attend. Most importantly, the Ask a Question text box allows you to participate in the event by simply typing questions into the box and hitting the Submit Question button below. You can submit questions at any time during the course of the presentation, and we encourage you to do so early and often while you're reviewing the material. We'll address as many of these as possible during the closing Q&A, and if you have questions about the ECAT webcast operation itself, feel free to submit those, and one of our technicians will be happy to assist you. One final reminder is that all Open Systems Media webcasts are copyrighted and may not be recorded without prior permission. At this point, we can get started, so I'd like to hand it off to Pavan Singh of Wind River. Pavan, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Brandon. Thank you all for joining us. It's a pleasure to be here. Good morning to some and good afternoon to some. So what we'll do today is I'll go through some of the core concepts behind what excites us about workload consolidation, especially how it's kind of driving the next evolution of industrial IoT. And then Tony will join me in answering some of the questions as well as kind of more of a discussion towards what's really what our customers talking about and how they're leveraging it. So to start with, what I want to do is kind of step back a little bit. First of all, who we are. Wind River, some of you might know, was founded in 1981. We've been around a while. And we've been focused on really building the software infrastructure for mission-critical applications. And we've been a leader in the OS market space. We also have a pretty broad embedded software portfolio. So this will be the only Wind River piece in the whole thing. But if you have questions about what we do and how we can help you, let us know. So to start with, really kind of this time stepping back quite a bit. So how did we get here? Today, we'll primarily talk about how IoT came to what it is today, but really now is the time where, because of technology readiness and the market readiness, we are really kind of looking at this transition into the next evolution of industrial IoT. So what happened in 1960s, 1970s, it's when the real mainframe, the centralized compute came up. And that was the first time that there was a centralized compute part that came together. At some point, the people realized that dedicating all that compute power in just one place wasn't that efficient. So you really wanted multiple people to actually be able to access compute. So that's when you got multiple people accessing kind of mainframe, and that kind of evolved into now more of a client-server model, where with the PCs and Macs, now you have compute at the client level, but you also had enterprise level and enterprise size server kind of a compute, and that's when it really became the client-server model. Now, where we are in and almost towards the end of this era is a mobile cloud, where It's really about combination of mobile computing, the cloud computing, and mobile networks, really bringing it all together. And in some ways, it's a combination of the mainframe and the client-server model. Where we are heading to, and we're pretty much in the early days of it, is the IoT distributed model. And the part of the discussion today is how when we started, IoT was very much about cloud connectivity to certain things and devices. Now it's evolving into more of a distributed discussion. So what that means is that now on the IoT side, it's no longer one or the other. It's really about a continuum. It's at the device at the edge, some of the fail-safe devices. You've got the fog, whether it's kind of right next to the device or in an on-prem data center, and you've got a cloud, and the cloud could be a private cloud setting or a public cloud setting. And really, the idea is that the most efficient architectures leverage the best of the location among these four different points in the stack, but then are also flexible as the needs of a use case evolve, are able to now change what they expect from fail-safe devices, fog, or cloud. And we kind of call it, we started defining a term called fluid computing. We won't cover a lot of that today, but what I want to talk about is that the first step towards that continuum is to now at each level, making sure your workloads are consolidated, they're flexible, they're agile. So let's talk about that. So with that, the other part that's happening from an industrial IoT perspective is that a few years back when we talked about digital transformation, it was a lot about pilots. People were still evaluating what's happening. They were thinking about how much to invest, whether to invest or not. And what we are seeing now, I was in two different conferences over the last few months in Chicago, and almost all of the companies we talked to are now looking to mainstream these digital transformation initiatives. In fact, it's the point where the core strategy is digital transformation, and the success of that strategy depends on the transformation. And now it's all about how can we get the ROI from those initiatives, and how quickly can we get. So what does that mean in terms of where the companies are? That investment in IoT is now manifesting itself in terms of analytics capabilities. The drive for cost reduction is now coming across as requirement software defined. The focus on security is evolving now that a lot of the devices and appliances now have this ability to update and secure. And the discussion from automation is now moving towards autonomous. And we'll talk a little bit about that trend, which I think is more of a external market-driven trend that affects us quite a bit. So what we've done from a Wind River perspective is we really kind of went to this and said, okay, what we are now moving from enabling hardware to now enabling use cases. And what that means is that instead of like focusing on the hardware and the board support packages, we are now looking at what is the software infrastructure that can really support your use cases and bring them to life. We also are very aware that these use cases evolve. So once you deploy, that's not the end of it. You still need to be flexible. So we want to make sure the flexibility is built in. And then the cost can be really high. So our focus now is how can we make sure that the ROI of the use cases is significant in the short term and with a much better long-term value. So that's how we're evolving, and that's why we are here today talking to you about how the industrial IoT is now ready for the next phase of evolution and disruption. So what really brings us here? So if you think about till now, our goal was, in some ways, IoT was about taking the existing architectures in the industrial environment. And you got the control HMI, other devices, you got the on-prem cloud or servers, and you got the control room, and really kind of connecting to the cloud. That was the idea that IoT came up with. But the problem with that is that just means that you are depending on that cloud, whether it's public or private, for all your innovation. But that means that that doesn't do anything about your current hardware-based architectures, the fact that they are fixed, the dedicated functions, the deployment maintenance upgrade is not easy. Sending everything to the cloud means high bandwidth requirement. And also, since the current industrial architectures were not built with security in mind, that also means that deploying full-scale security is really hard. So the tagline then is that this rigidity of that current existing architectures kind of limited the value that industrial IoT could bring to you. So what we are seeing then is it's the next gen where there are two big trends that are really helping us really drive that additional level of value. Now, number one is that we are now seeing that in the industrial IoT environments, we are moving from fixed function kind of controller type or HMI-type products now to smart multi-function product with more software content and flexibility. We're seeing dedicated appliances for single applications now to move to virtualized multi-application alliance. And this transition might seem simple. It hasn't been, and it's taken a lot of the experience that we've got in the operational technology in this domain to really make sure that the technology is ready to make this transition. And what we did is we actually learned from two different industries, really the avionics side, where about 10 to 15 years ago, what we did is we actually went to the avionics industry and really developed a virtualized approach to the avionics side. I mean, in simple terms, the electronics that keep the plane in the air. And now that market we've been serving for a number of years. So we have kind of mastered that approach on how do you now deliver virtualization solutions to this mission-critical industry. And we saw a similar trend in telecom world as well, and that's where we've been working for a while with them. Now, if you think about it, that capability of virtualizing in the mission-critical environments really enables this idea of workload consolidation. So what does that mean? That means that if you think about today, your products, you might have a separate control function on an RTOS, you might have a HMI on Linux, you might have HMI, another set of HMIs on Windows. But now with embedded virtualization, you can now really have these multiple functions on one architecture. And what that means is now you can have your existing functions kind of consolidated so that it's easier to maintain and multiple of other benefits, but now you can also easily add new content to it, especially when it talks of machine vision, AI, data analytics, where a lot of the real-time data analytics have benefits in improving the downtime or reducing downtime and then generating returns for you. So what changed for it, especially let's talk about safety applications, for example. In safety applications, if you had a piece of the content here that you had certified, now with this virtualization enabled for at the controller level, now you don't have to recertify it. You can update it. You can actually now add new content to it. Similarly, you can update without reprogramming the entire PLC. You can now if you are somebody who builds this product, now you can add new functionality to the product without going with a screwdriver and trying to change everything. You can actually have local analytics running, for example, vibrations in machines. And in fact, if you had a certain algorithm running today and you don't like it, you got another one, you can now replace it. Traditionally, you would have to wait for quite a bit of time or go in the field and actually change something on the product itself. You can now support open source and middleware as you want to now, whether try out a new middleware or replace it with something else. You can do that in a software-defined manner. So if you think about that, what happened is really that we are moving from what were kind of single products now to this platform that can span multiple products. And you can really kind of customize the product based on the need when you're deploying the first time. But in the future, when you can come back, upgrade it, and then add new content as you need it. And again, this was at the controller level. So going to the next level, really, this is where we have worked a lot in, we spent a lot of time and energy in really kind of bringing what was the IT kind of type of virtualization now to making it ready for the OT, for the operational environments where reliability, performance, scalability are really critical. What that means is a few examples are we made sure that there is deterministic ultra low latency, there is fault tolerance to multiple software and hardware fault, there's automatic detection recovery of failed nodes. And so when you think about your industrial environments, industrial and medical environments, you can actually now, instead of having separate appliances that run all of the applications, you can actually now consolidate them into one platform, and you can use the same platform for multiple of these virtualized workloads. So now that ends up saving management costs. It ends up becoming easier to manage from just the number of platforms you have to think about. It helps in the number of development teams you need to focus on different platforms. So we talked about the architecture wherein till now it was existing industrial architectures with kind of connection to a cloud or simple kind of simple add-ons. But what we are seeing now is the architecture is evolving rapidly towards this more of a software-defined play at the different layers where if you think about the controller level, you have multi-function products that can be updated, upgraded, as well as and managed via software. You've got that abstraction layer of in between. Then at the appliance level, you've got, again, a software platform where you're running multiple applications, but again, they can be now deployed, managed, and provisioned in a software manner. And in some ways, the cloud still has a role to play, but it can be helping with the updates, with the security monitoring, with some of the zero-touch provisioning. So now, instead of depending on the cloud for all your applications and really incurring that high bandwidth, high cost, and you're now looking at the entire architecture being software-defined. And we are moving closer towards that fully software-defined architecture. This is the intermediate step in that process. And would love to hear where you are in your journey on this process. We're definitely working a lot of and having discussions today about how to move towards this. So in summary, what this means, we also call it the east to west, north to south, just to differentiate. If you think about east to west consolidation, it's more about in your facilities, in your factory environments, in your refinery environments, and north to south is really the consolidation and virtualization across different points of presence in the network. So let's take so before we go further, so we till now we talked about how the current architectures will now move to this next gen. But if you think about, there's one additional external trend that's really affecting the need for the software defined architecture. And if you think that is a trend towards autonomous. So the autonomous architect, what has happened in the market is this world really started with kind of automatic to automated, where the goal was there was semi supervised, there was humans involved in the loop, it was closed environment. For example, you still put a cage around a robot. And everything was, intelligence was rule-based. Where we are really moving towards this autonomous, where it's more about self-learning, it's about intelligence that you train the machine, and the machine is able to do a lot by itself, and it can, for a lot of tasks, it can work alongside humans. And the safety is part and parcel of the design of the system. So if you think about a system like that, And towards, as we move more and more towards autonomous architectures, what kind of workloads would it need? And as we think about this, there are four different kinds of things we see. There is the data extraction with the sensors, whether it's a LiDAR or just a camera or other proximity sensors. There's data extraction from that. Then there's really the data analytics, right, from simple rule-based analytics to full deep learning to computer vision. Once you have that data, now the next thing is about control, which is what do you do with it, but you do it in a way that it's safe and the system does exactly what you need it to do. And the last part is the risk management, where how do you together come as an industry to make sure that collectively we have a common way of thinking about how to manage risk. So if you think about this this view and the world evolving towards autonomous systems, the right side was where operational technology, OT, focused the most. And the left side is where the IT technologies have been talking a lot. But going forward, we see these coming together. So if you think about workloads, a piece of these workloads might run at the control level. They'll definitely run at the appliance level. And they'll run next to each other. They'll feed off each other. So to us, a combination of the software-defined world really enabling the workload consolidation virtualization and the need for autonomous systems brings it all together to really realize the next gen, the next value capture from the promise of industrial IoT. And true enough, when we talk to customers, almost all of them are looking at some sort of data analytics, some sort of data modeling within their companies, and working with external experts as well on what can they do from the next gen product. And that starts with that level of thinking, but really having the right development platform to give the flexibility to actually drive this momentum. So to step back now, let's talk about two examples that you might have come across, and we definitely have, that would be useful. And so the first one I want to talk about is when you're thinking about designing a system of systems. So and examples that we have come across are rail, medical, industrial automation. Especially rail is interesting because it's moving more and more towards from automatic to automated to kind of almost fully autonomous, especially the development of technologies like Hyperloop. So what's happening there is that there's a combination of lots and lots of applications, lots and lots of controls that today have their own dedicated hardware and a software stack. So I show three here on the left, but really this is a very large number that today is used. And what we've done is our embedded virtualization platform is designed that really safety certified layer enables islands of safety that can host these applications. Now they can be separated from non-safe or other safety applications at system integration time. And what this means that once this platform has been tested for safety and the separation proven between the safe and non-safe, now the design now allows to manage the non-safe applications regularly, and they are updated or replaced as required. Now, and if the system is designed well, you should not require the retesting from a safety perspective of a safety workload, especially because that can be really expensive. And from a design flexibility perspective, the number one thing that we didn't talk about is now you can have the same hardware that can span both safety, non-safety, and the mixed workloads. Now, that platform design can be now prototyped and tested using standard products. And now you can then focus on the expensive certification more at the software level. And that overall, that means to you that now you have a common platform that, and it's partly enabled because we see the move from single core to multi-core. So now you can do the separation at the core level or within a core. And once you do that, you can then what we call the safe cost when you talk about day zero, which is the development, day one when you're deploying the solution, and day two when the solution is deployed, you have to come back and upgrade or operate or manage it. So this is for the system of systems. It really makes it simple for you now to think about how do you now deploy a safety and non-safety workloads in a very effective manner. By the way, in this case, I show kind of on the right one box, but really in case of safety, you might have, for redundancy, you might have two. But you don't need to have complete hardware redundancy because with workload consolidation, you have that enabled. So this next example is, now let's move from system of systems to more of a single product. So today, what you might today have is, you might have two different kind of products. One is a PLC built on RTOS. You might have an HMI product, separate product. You might have separate product teams. You probably have, which are expensive to maintain. And once they are deployed, that is it. You can't really update or upgrade them or offer new services on top. But as we see in the future, what you can really leverage is you can actually make sure with a virtualized platform, you have a common development platform, even from a product perspective. So when you offer a product, it can have a PLC functionality, or it can have HMI functionality, or both. And it can have provisioning to actually now add new functionality later on. So what that means is that once a customer, if you are an OEM, if you supply a product, or if you are an end user, you have these things deployed now. And if you have new needs, then you can actually add control or analytics on top of it. And if you want to update the existing, whether it's HMI, you can do that as well. The final part is that if you have your legacy IP, whether it's safety that you really think is important, now you can carry it over from product to product without having to redo it for different products. That's what we call it prevents you from the cost related to hardware obsolescence. So really, it's making sure that instead of having multiple SKUs, multiple product development teams, you now have a single platform that you can now create multiple SKUs towards the end. But early on in the process, it's a very efficient process when it comes to developing products. So we talked about the two examples, which is the system of systems and specific products. Now let's take a little bit a view of how, kind of a broader view of how the different industries can benefit from this. And in your case, you might be serving different industries or a specific one. And it's interesting, a lot of these industries are feeding off of each other. So if you think about industrial and robotics today, they're still caged. The safety capability is essentially a cage around the robotics. And they can be difficult to reconfigure and program because there's limited capability on the robot itself. Where we're seeing this evolving is that now with safety built in, the robots can actually move to a free, to kind of more of a collaborative robot where they're working alongside humans. And today you do have cobots, but they're usually slow or they have low payload. And where we're really seeing the current robot capabilities extending to more of the collaborative robots. In addition to that, now the robots can be future-proof, so you can sell services on top of the robot, whether it's monitoring the quality of the paint or making sure that if there's a fault, there's a defect, you're passing that on. If you're learning something on the assembly line, that is passed on and is fixed in a systematic manner. Same way for controls and safety. Today, you see more kind of fixed rigid architectures, and there's a long life cycle to update these. We see that moving more towards a more software defined architectures where it's more agile. You can respond to the markets faster, and you can evolve your own business models faster. And really, it's about balancing the safety functionality with flexibility. So this was for the more of the industrial automation side. Now, and if you look at the transportation, which is to us is a very broad segment, but I thought it's important to give you a flavor of what's going on in the three subsegments that are seeing equal amount of disruption. One is autonomous ground vehicles. It includes everything from consumer cars to commercial vehicles to indoor robots. And this is where we are seeing a lot of new designs and changing expectations and standards. And this is also where the next-gen autonomous systems are being designed today. We are seeing a lot of the translation from our technology from aviation coming in here, and a lot of the designs to be future-proof. So again, as the markets evolve, as the regulations evolve, as the technology gets more mature, these designs can be ready to incorporate them rather than a rip and replace. The second segment here is the autonomous smaller vehicles. You must have heard a lot about the flying cars or the UAVs or the drones and the flying taxis. This market is evolving rapidly. It's not as mature as the other two, but adding a passenger focus to more of the drone type of thinking really makes it really cost sensitive, but safety focused, but autonomy is still important. Because when you think about flying cars or flying taxis, you're expecting the passenger to kind of sit there, maybe input a few things, but really kind of be flown from point to point. And this is where the rapid system development evolution is really critical. The last part is one of the more mature segments is the larger vehicle that includes the planes we see, except that a lot of they're also moving towards more of more flexibility, different sizes of the planes. Really, the affordability is becoming a big concern, as well as now more sensors are being put on these platforms. So this is where consolidation of certified systems, how do you control the cost, and really flexibility to add sensors on there becomes really important. So this whole transportation sector is evolving, and as we with workload consolidation and virtualization at the embedded level and at the appliance level, now we are seeing the system being truly flexible to drive that market trends forward. And the last two I want to cover really are the energy and the medical. So from the energy perspective, medical first. From medical perspective, the three things that we look at, one is the small medical devices. This is where they are in the rapid development cycles. There's higher FDA guidelines for security and connectivity. And this is where the footprint is small, but we still need still a common platform development is really important, and that's what workload consolidation can enable. When we think about large medical equipment like MRI machines or large operating room equipment, till now the security has been really difficult because architectures are complicated. And now what we're seeing is that these architectures are becoming simpler and more consolidated. So with that, now you can focus on health outcomes. You can now add intelligence that can really look at what can you do to drive better outcomes. But with that comes the need for security and connectivity. Now that can support that level of augmentation of for medical professionals. The last part is medical robotics. This area has been developing steadily, but not as fast as we thought it will. So, but this is the time where the medical robotics and the industrial robotics kind of learning off each other, and now we are seeing expansion of medical robotics into more procedures. And as the safety requirements, FDA requirements catch up, the more and more of the flexibility to implement that on the robots becomes important, and that is really kind of enabled. So we talked about four kind of large market segments. In your case, you might cover a combination of these or a couple of these. But really, what is happening is that if you think there's a common theme here, that safety and the workload consolidation, flexibility, while looking at costs are really important. And in some ways, when we look at, we have customers in all of these segments, and when we look at providing the best kind of software infrastructure that can enable this next evolution across all of these. So in summary, what we talked about today was that really that we are looking at workload consolidation embedded as well as appliance level, but it's really being enabled by, actually, let me cover energy too. So before we go into the summary, let's cover the energy too. So in energy, there are three things, with three big sectors, which is oil and gas, renewables, and utilities. If you think about oil and gas, there have been pretty high cost pressures. And in addition, there is a big need to now implement digital transformation initiatives. And this sector is one that's really driving the abstraction of hardware to allow for flexibility in a focused manner. And this is also where mission critical and really the safety of the personnel is important. And this is where this architecture is taking place now. In case of renewables, it's a lot about how do you continue to drive ROI from the renewable establishments and keeping up with the maintenance and the quality and the cost for subsequent deployment. And they're moving more towards edge analytics so that the systems can be optimized to generate more power and more efficiently, as well as updating them so that you can keep up with some of these findings. Because of utilities, this industry has evolved a lot from generating power and charging for it to now generating power but also accepting distributed power from renewable sources from solar panels at homes to wind farms. But then there's also movement to open up the grid. With that comes the need to protect the grid. So what workload consolidation really does is allow for a really a gradual transition, so that you can transition while utilities can transition while meeting their outage requirements, and really kind of be able to retrofit current technology where you need, but then also implement new technologies with the kind of future proofing that we've been talking about. So with that, we've covered all of our four segments. And with that, in summary, let's talk a little bit about why are we here today? In some ways, the abundance of the cores, we're seeing more and more multi-core coming into play. We see the size, weight, and power being solved more effectively. And now the robust isolation means that you can have the high degree of kind of really separation you can go from all safety to majority safety all the way to kind of minor safety workloads. So you have that flexibility. With robust partitioning, now you can kind of reuse your existing IP across different products and actually innovate while building new content in addition to, and then not have to redo your existing IP. And the last part is a hardware obsolescence. This is where the abstraction from the hardware and really being able to innovate with new products creates that velocity and removes the limitation and the cost required to have to now redo all of your software for new hardware platforms. So with that, the four things in summary that we talked about were number one was the kind of the business benefit we talked about was the lower BOM. It's lower cost because you're combining multiple systems into one system. You're replacing multiple systems with single multi-core. You're reducing failure rates. So you're reducing spares. And then the next thing is really about you're reducing the space required, because space and size is a big challenge here. So because you're reducing the number of purpose-built systems, that means that, A, not only your complexity reduces, but the space required also reduces. So now you can leverage that space for your next gen systems, for your next next gen analytics, or add more to your current deployments. And then it really allows for the flexibility that you can add new content to existing systems, and that while managing your risk, because all of us want to add new content, innovate, but in the mission critical industry, managing risk is really important. And so now you can really manage both of these factors well. And the last part is really the you being able to move from kind of physically having to provision and deploy these full architectures, now being able to do that more from a softer manner. So this means that when you talk about the first-time deployment and then now evolving your deployment to as a use case evolves, that becomes a lot easier now, because it's not somebody with a screwdriver that has to go down and plug in something physically to actually evolve that. You can do it from a softer manner and remotely do it. In fact, we see a lot more capabilities in the future where you will be able to manage and orchestrate completely from a software-defined manner, and that now reduces your management costs, makes it easier for your customers to deploy them, and if there is a challenge or a downtime, it makes it easier for you to kind of go through and troubleshoot on what's happening. So what's next? We really think it's a three-step process. The number one step is apply workload consolidation to your current products at the embedded level and appliance level. At the embedded level by consolidating multiple of these functions into one and reducing costs both for you and your customers. At the appliance level by taking multiple applications and then with the level of reliability and the performance that is now available, now combine them into one. But that's a step one where you're focused on saving costs for across the value chain. But we really think, and we're working with a few customers on that, we think about the next-gen products. We think the next-gen products will be designed, yes, for being there for a long time, but also with the capability to offer and allow new services on top, either directly on the device itself, whether it's new machine learning algorithms or new security workload, but also connected to a cloud platform where you can now look at the data and combine your cloud capabilities with your actual product to kind of deliver the optimal operations. And the last part is we see these step one and two really building towards a all software-based architecture with the hardware being focused on the I/O or the actual electromechanical movement, and really kind of the system being smart enough to adapt autonomously to the needs of the use case. Till that time, as we look at this step, we want to engage with you and share with you what you're learning. So tell us where you are in this journey, and ask us questions on how we can help you. This is the kind of end of the prepared presentation, but I'll hand it to you back to Brandon for the Q&A, and also welcome Tony for the Q&A.
Great. Thank you, Pavan. That was some really good stuff there. And as Pavan mentioned, beyond his great insight into workload consolidation on the industrial IoT, Tony Krupe, the Director of Field Engineering at Wind River, will be joining us for the Q&A session. So keep your questions coming, and we'll get to as many of them as we can in the time we have remaining. So welcome back, Tony. I think at this point I'll pick on you a little bit and give Pavan a little bit of a breather. First question for you here is, how do you see customers leveraging workload consolidation right now in their new products?
Okay, that's a great question, Brendan. Thanks for the question. So let me address that. As Pavan had stated in his presentation, there are many use cases. The traditional use case is a multi-board system where each board performs a specific application. And that's one of the ones that we're all very comfortable with, especially from some of us that's been in the industry for a while. So you might have a one board that's doing some real-time data acquisition and machine control. Second board, maybe doing HMI, a human-machine interface, and then possibly a third board that's doing analytics or crunching the data. So the data acquisition board might be running a real-time operating system to meet the critical timing and deterministic requirements. The HMI may be running Windows and then maybe Linux on the third board. So a great example is a robotics application. One of our customers does robotics in industrial and had this similar system, as well as we have a healthcare customer that does radiological equipment. And they were able to take those three applications and run them in their virtualized environment and preserve the real-time characteristics.
Excellent. All right. I'll double up with you, Tony. And actually, the next couple are kind of related. So, Pavan, if you'd like to jump in, feel free, but we'll kick them off with Tony here. Is workload consolidation just about consolidating existing workloads? We'll take that one first.
Sure. One of the great slides that Pavan had was talking about the move from fixed function devices to smart multifunction devices. And I like that. And the reason why I like that is because it's basically addressed what you were talking about. And I want to expand that a little bit. Is it really just for existing products? Is it for new products? So our customers are now doing like a holistic approach to their system designs and moving away from fixed purpose hardware to more general purpose hardware. We're seeing FPGAs being used more often. A lot of them have embedded processors in there, such as those from Xilinx and Altera, are being used. So now, instead of having fixed hardware, you actually have programmable hardware. We have a customer that's in the transportation industry, and they're doing a new design, and they want to develop, instead of there's many hardware and software systems in a transportation application, and instead of doing a dozen or so proprietary hardware solutions, they want to have a common hardware approach and a common software approach. So they're moving to get a certified hardware along with workload consolidation and allowing you to run multiple applications on this general purpose hardware. So, and why do they do that? They've seen both the development and maintenance costs will be dramatically reduced, as well as an overall simpler design. You know, it'd be nice to have a smaller set of hardware than many different things. And you're seeing that also in the avionics industry. Pavan had touched upon it. Every modern plane you run on today has been doing this for years, is really for the space, weight, and power considerations, because every additional pound of equipment is directly impacts the fuel costs. So they've been doing that. If you're running on a plane, it's been happening, and we see it happening across the industries now.
Great. And actually, that was a good segue into another question. Now let's shift a little bit and look at workload consolidation in the context of a system of systems. How do you see it playing out there?
So, you know, there was in one of Pavan's slides, he talked about enabling hardware to enabling use cases. And that's the way we're seeing the industry move forward. In the past, I used to be a hardware designer and a software designer in the good old days, right? And essentially, when I wrote software, it was to enable the hardware. In a lot of cases, we lost track of what the end goal was. And the industry, for better, is looking at the end goal and looking at the end use cases and what's needed. And it turns out, you know, system designer now has the freedom to do the right tool and the right software to match their requirements. And really for code reuse. So I have a customer that had an existing hardware, as we all do. No one always starts with a blank slate. A lot of times it's existing legacy software to use. And they had 1 million lines of code written for a particular operating system, particular hardware. It's really a networking application. And they needed to obviously port the hardware, came end of life. They need to run on new hardware. Of course, they could port their new code to a new operating system, integrate it all together. That takes time. And it's also a large testing and validation effort. It would be great if all of us didn't have schedules or even a boss, right, so we could take our time to do this. But unfortunately, that's not reality. Maybe I'll find somewhere that is a reality. But for today, we have a schedule. So what this customer did was, instead of porting all that code to that new processor on the new operating system, they were able to put that code in a virtual machine alongside the new modern code they're running. So they integrated in one VM, and they had another VM that was running, still maintaining the integrity of the system. Then I have another customer in the industrial space. They do PLCs, and this is a safety-certified application. They wrote a SIL3, and what they had written their own operating system. I've done my own operating system years ago, and as we all know, it's great the first time around, but trying to maintain it's difficult. However, they had a lot of code legacy on that, and they also had it certified. So we helped them take that code and run it on a bare metal virtual machine in a virtualized environment. So they take advantage of the code reuse, however, are able to take advantage of new features, new technologies that are out there.
That's great.
And Tony, if I may add to that, I think the interesting part that you were touching on is there is this confluence of multiple trends being ready. One is from an architecture perspective, but also from, if you look at the hardware perspective, there are a lot of hardware capabilities that we are able to leverage now to really drive that level of the robust partitioning, so that, to your point, if you have a safety workload that you don't want to touch ever, but you still want to make sure that you can take it from product generation to product generation, now you can actually make sure that you're developing your new capabilities and not affecting your core safety load, your core safety workload.
Great. Pavan was chomping at the bit to get back involved, so I'll give you another one here that sort of relates to that, Pavan. So if you could expand a little bit, what types of workloads are you accustomed to seeing in industrial and medical environments, for example? So, like, how do you see multiple workloads in those types of safety-critical applications often operating today and then perhaps in the future?
Yeah, and thank you for that, Brandon. And I'll share my bit, but I would love to give it to, I think, Tony, you already touched on a few of those, of the different workloads, and those very interesting, especially the radiology one. So what happens in the industrial and medical space, there are the couple, one way to look at it is safety and certification specific, and then you look at the real-time and determinism requirement workloads, and then you're looking at none of those that, but they need to be at a specific location. They don't have their workloads that don't have a real-time or determinist requirement or have a safety requirement, but they still need to be at appliance level or at a controller level. So, so if you think about these workloads, they in a way that now the power here is really to mix and match these multiple workloads in the way you see fit. That's the most effective for that architecture and the solution. And so I kind of see them divided in that. But Tony, if you would like to bring up the things you already mentioned, actually, that was a good description.
Sure. You know, one thing I want to add to, and we touched on it a little bit in the presentation, is a lot of times people think of workloads and workload consolidation as really, okay, just reducing bill of materials, right? We have four boards, I'm reducing to one. And that is obviously a very good application. If you could have one board versus four boards or five boards or whatever and have them all run on a single piece of hardware, you're saving money, you're saving bill of materials, space and weight if you're on an aircraft and so forth, and as well as maintenance. However, another thing is reducing the overall complexity of the system. So it allows you to bring down and reduce the number of discrete boards you have. It protects against hardware obsolescence. But the other thing I want to touch upon is software isolation. So now your individual applications can be isolated from one another to help you build a high available system. For instance, go back to the example I talked about, my customer, they have a Windows board separate, and then they have data acquisition board that's a real-time operating system and so forth. Now, think about if the Windows machine crashes, that never really happens, but if it does, the system still has to go on, but how do you go back and reset that device, right? Can you have a health monitor that checks the integrity of these devices? Well, people have built their own, but now imagine you integrate that all into one virtualized environment, and that HMI was a virtual machine running. You could have a health monitor that it runs in another virtual machine that takes a look at what's going on with all the other VMs, determines that there's a problem in one of the VMs, just go back and you could restart it, and the system's back up. A little more difficult when it's separate boards.
Great.
And one thing that we do a lot nowadays is that we do a lot of these discovery discussions where some of the things that were that you would think that needed to be separate, and you were kind of taking on those costs and those investments, we kind of discuss on what makes sense to bring together, and then what makes sense to kind of keep open as a flexibility. So, for example, let's say if you have an analytics partner that you work with today, they have their kind of part running on your product. But tomorrow you come across somebody that's even more relevant to you, or you have another that you wanted to run right next to the current one. That is, in some ways, preparing for that is really important. And that's where the step two in our recommendation is to now looking at your next-gen products and looking at what you need to do to prepare for what this industry will want next.
That's excellent. We had a question there. That again ties into this. It was about software architecture and best practices, and I believe that both of you have touched on it a little bit. But as you move from distributed multi-platform based designs into this more multi-core world in some of these environments, how do you go about that in the best way in terms of software architecture and design? I guess we'll start with Tony.
Sure. Thanks. That's an interesting question. I'll just preface that with saying every design is different. There's really no cookie cutter when it comes to system design and software design. But what we found is when you go and develop software that's running in a hypervisor, for instance, or workload consolidation application, in fact, it's a little bit easier. You can actually start, people don't realize it, but you can start on separate machines, right? You don't have to have it all running together day one. So if I'm, for instance, Pavan and myself and Brandon, yourself, we're all three different companies or even three different groups working on a similar application, we could all each start on our own hardware platform, develop and test it separately, and then make sure we do our unit testing and software testing. And then during the integration phase, bring that in, bring the virtual machines in, and get them working together. And that's a pretty straightforward approach. We've done that with a number of our customers already that we had to virtualize. So probably the biggest challenge is if some people have code that might be old and not really very portable. So that's usually the big challenge where people are directly calling hardware, and especially if you have something that might be running on a PowerPC and you need to have that run on Intel or an ARM architecture. So that's usually the first step. But once you get that running separately, you can then port that into a virtual machine, get that working, and then bring the integration together. Similarly, what's done in the aerospace market, you have a prime contractor, for instance. Boeing would go to many subcontractors, and they're all developing their own software independently, and then the system integrator takes them in together and then validates that.
Excellent. Here's another one back into the safety realm. It states, if you put safety critical and non-safety critical systems onto the same platform, how are you able to demonstrate safety? For example, if you're trying to build an ISO 26262 compliant system that has a safety issue even with sensor fusion, are there any ways that this could be demonstrated more easily than not, perhaps, or hypervisor? I don't know. To you, Tony?
The one thing that we've done a lot is that we've done well is that we've been working with the avionics industry, and this is where the regulations, the safety certifications are pretty tight. And what we have done is we have now made sure that we've demonstrated certification for the certified workload, and that as well as your hypervisor or your virtualization environment. And so once that happens, then because of robust partitioning, that is how you demonstrate safety. And now you can have multiple partitions with different levels of safety requirement, and we have demonstrated that as well. So in some ways, we talked about we have proven that and learned a lot about this particular topic from the avionics and telco industry. And in fact, even in the industry we've been doing it for a little bit, now I think it's where it's really taking off. Back to you, Tony.
Yeah, I just want to add just one thing. Wind River and our hypervisor, as well as some of other companies in the industry, have gotten their hypervisor, now we've gotten our hypervisor certified for safety levels for both DO-178C, which is the FAA for your aircraft standards, as well as IEC 61508, which is the TUV or the safety integrity levels safety. So, for instance, the Wind River hypervisor we certified to level A, which is the highest on DO-178C, and as well as SIL-3, which is the highest for software, and there's higher levels, obviously, in SIL, but for the software up to level SIL-3. So the software itself and the hypervisor has been certified, and we have the certificates to go with that. And because of that, the software guests that run under that can be certified to any level up to that. So, for instance, what's nice about having the hypervisor pre-certified, it actually makes your integration a lot faster and a lot easier. And the amount of certification needed for the system is small because you may have something that's at a lower safety level, some of the code, while it's at a higher safety level. And in fact, the less that you have to test, the less expensive the software development is. And we all know how expensive it is to do certifications, hundreds of dollars per line of code, to get at the highest safety level.
Great. I think we got time for one more question, and we need about a 30-second response. But this is very interesting, especially for people who are used to massive levels of redundancy. What about the increase in a single point of failure at the virtualization level if you're starting to consolidate all of these workloads?
I could say that. That's an interesting question. That's a great question because let's say you have four boards and you know you consolidating to one, well, now you have one single point of failure. But remember, if one of those other boards failed in the past, it would still be a single point of failure.
Mm.
So, you know, in the data center side, sometimes people, and that's probably a topic for another seminar, maybe we'll do that later on, where there's actually solutions where you could have multiple server blades running where it allows you to do that high availability and do the failover and to get up to six nines of high availability. So, Pavan, you're going to add something?
Yeah, so to add to that, I think and we are about running out of time here, but I think we can happy talk to you guys more about this topic. But if you think about it's really making sure that you will want to have hardware redundancy, like two different platforms that run the same thing, if that's important. But then what you're really looking at is that now within that, you're making sure that if one workload crashes or goes down for some point, it doesn't affect the rest of the systems. So there are ways that if you want both hardware redundancy as well as software virtualization, you can have that. But at the end of the day, the flexibility is what this kind of technology really provides you.
Excellent. Well, unfortunately, that brings us to the end of our time today. And for those of you who had questions that we weren't able to get to, we'll make sure to have the appropriate representatives from Wind River follow up with you. I'd like to thank our speakers today, Pavan Singh and Tony Krupe of Wind River, for their great insight onto workload consolidation, particularly for critical systems and the industrial Internet of Things. And we at Open Systems Media and Wind River would also like to thank you, the audience, for attending today and contributing some of those great questions. This webcast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen within 24 hours, and an audio-only podcast will be made available there as well. You can do a web search with the keywords embedded space e-cast and find all of Open Systems Media's webcasts available for download there as MP3s. Thanks again for attending, and have a great day.